Welcome to HCCI's Lights of Hope Radio. You are listening to Save Harlem Churches. HCCI was founded more than three decades ago by a group of clergy who wanted to improve the lives of the Harlem residents. My name is Malcolm Punter. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of Harlem Congregations for Community Improvement, a coalition of Harlem churches and houses of worship in the Harlem community that was created in 1986, three decades ago, by a group of clergy. Harlem congregations consist of Harlem churches, Harlem mosques, Harlem temples, and Harlem synagogues. All houses of worship are included. We're here today to talk about the Save Harlem Churches movement, a movement that HCCI, by virtue of its creation, spearheaded some 33 years ago. The churches that were belonging to HCCI in 1986 implemented a plan that transformed the Harlem community. Now, many of these entities are facing decline. On this show, we will explore the challenges, the triumphs of maintaining often historic sites such as churches, real estate sites owned by churches, and the souls that make up many of our congregations. We'll explore how we can save Harlem churches. Today, we are joined by three Harlem activists, Harlem luminaries. We're joined by Valerie Bradley of Save Harlem Now, Beatrice Siblis of Boss Development, a local Harlem-based real estate development company that focuses on saving Harlem churches, and HCCI's own board member, the Reverend Dr. Nigel Pierce, and the pastor of the Grace Congregational Church of Harlem. We welcome you all to the HCCI Lights of Hope radio show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Reverend Pierce, thank you for being here. I hope all the other our guests are here today.
I'm here, Valerie Bradley.
Hi, Valerie. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Thank you for joining us. And our third guest is Beatrice Siblis. Beatrice, are you here?
Good day, everyone.
Great. So, thank you for joining. I'm going to give a brief biography of our people here, so that all of our listeners would know who's joined us on the show today. As I said, Reverend Pierce is a board member of Harlem Congregations for Community Improvement and also has an impressive background in and of itself. Reverend Pierce is now a Reverend Dr. Nigel Pierce, who is a graduate of the New York Theological Seminary. But before becoming a clergy, Reverend Pierce was a Wall Street banker. He owned his own firm on Wall Street. So he was one of the power brokers in the financial industry, and he gave up that career to become a pastor. He received the call to the ministry. So Reverend Pierce is now the senior pastor of Grace Congregational Church in Harlem, and he brings a unique perspective, having a finance background and a clerical background to the conversation today. Ms. Beatrice Siblis is a local real estate broker and developer and has worked with several churches in the Harlem community to preserve their churches, their sanctuaries, and their real property. And she comes here with over 20 years of experience in real estate development and finance and banking. Thank you for joining us. And we have Ms. Valerie Bradley, who is Saving Harlem Now. She's the director of the Saving Harlem Now movement, and has the president of the Saving Harlem Now movement. And Ms. Bradley has been on the forefront in bringing the awareness of the Harlem community in terms of saving Harlem churches. And we'll hear from Ms. Bradley on, you know, some of the key Harlem church structures that she's been able to help and advise in order to make sure that we don't lose our churches and our beautiful architecture of the Village of Harlem. So as the program is structured, we have three panelists today, and I would like to ask certain questions about the topic at hand. But before we do that, I'm going to give our panelists about 30 seconds to, you know, make some comments that they think is appropriate for the topic today. Save Harlem Churches Now. So, Reverend Pierce?
Yes. So, this is a very critical issue. I've always grown up in the house of worship and what they mean to the community and what they stand for and how they help to shape and certainly protect and give services to the community. So I am vitally very interested in making sure that churches stay healthy economically, but also remain in our community because they are a cornerstone and we cannot neglect them.
That's right. That's right. That's a very important point. Ms. Valerie Bradley?
Yes. Well, Save Harlem Now is a not-for-profit preservation organization, and we most recently got a historic district designated in September of 2018. And a couple of churches were in those boundaries, so that was a good thing that at least they're part of that historic district. So they are protected from being knocked down. In fact, one of the churches in that area, the garage, which was originally built as a stable, wanted to opt out of being in the historic district, but on a weekly basis was always approaching the church next door to it to try to sell it. So that said to us that they were planning some big development, and we would have no control over it if they were not in the historic district. Fortunate for us, it remained in the district. The council approved it, and we're on to our next projects. We just recently had a forum or a panel at the Black and Puerto Rican Caucus Black and Puerto Rican Legislators Legislative Weekend. That's a mouthful, right? We did a panel on churches and saving our faith-based institutions. It was very well received. Everybody's still talking about it, so much so that they want us to do one in Harlem, and then some people want us to do it in Brooklyn. And probably when we're finished with this, some more folks will want us to do something about this, because this is just not a Harlem problem. This is a national problem. Churches are dwindling. The way people worship has changed a lot. And so you don't have the same numbers of people who are around to help the church grow, help the church make their bills. And when we talk about these historic churches, when they go down, to have to rehabilitate them is a lot of money.
Sure.
And so, you know, we want to help churches do what's best for them, but to do it in the right way. Like, for example, we had the chief of the Charities Bureau for the AG's office who was on the panel, and he was very good in talking about what they do, and especially if a church feels that their church leadership or their minister has done an unscrupulous thing to sell the church for less than its value, or doing something else called, which we learned Saturday, steeplechasing, which is bringing in members to patch the numbers so that you can get the votes to do what you want to do. The AG's office and the Charities Bureau will look at those kinds of things. They will look at the sales of churches to see if they are being sold in a fair manner and that perhaps money's not going under the table, because that does happen, and we know it does happen. So I should end here so that maybe
talk. Thank you, Ms. Bradley. Reverend Pierce, could you sort of give us a perspective about your church and its history and what do you think is the factors that contribute to the dwindling membership, and is there anything that we can do about it, the change in how people worship?
Well, several things. Our church has been around since 1910. It originally started in the YMCA building on 135th, and folks gathered up in 10 years. They saved up about $50,000 to purchase that building on 139th, 310 West. So you can imagine a group of folks saving up $50,000 to purchase a building, which would probably amount to about $2.5 million today. But they had the foresight in 1923 when they bought the building to also buy four other brownstones in addition to that to help to sort of pay for missionary work and things of that nature. So they've had a long history of being in the community. Yes, worship style has changed. Certainly gentrification has caused diversification in the neighborhood. And people are not worshiping in traditional sense any longer. So churches do have to sort of become more spiritual centers almost, in a sense, to bring in folks. But the other side of that is the economics of churches don't work anymore. You know, what comes in on a Sunday cannot support your buildings and your infrastructure and your pastor's salary. So churches do have to find alternative means and methods of raising revenue, whether it's through the nonprofit end of missionary work and grant writing. But no longer can you finance your operation through what comes in on a Sunday morning. So diversification of revenue streams is certainly critical for churches today.
Thank you.
Well, you know, churches do also have to create other formats in order to go after grant money and to go after government money, because you can't get Rezo A money. Churches cannot get Rezo A money. They can't get government money. So they have to create various kinds of entities. And some churches have been rather creative and doing that, like a church on the Upper West Side made the kitchen, converted it to a condo so that it could go after various grants, but they can't have any religious activity in that space, or it can jeopardize the not-for-profit nature of the space. But what they do is they are feeding homeless people. It's a condo. They are attracting money to do that, and a percentage of that money goes to the church for as money that can be used to sustain the church financially.
Well, that's a good point. So, Beatrice, could you jump in and tell us about what you see as innovative ways for churches to maintain their building and maybe even generate income?
Sure. So I just wanted to thank you for the question. Also, just add a sentence about my bio. You know, Malcolm Punter mentioned that prior to doing development, I did structured finance on Wall Street. And one of the things that churches have a tremendous opportunity to be innovative about is the way that they structure their real estate. And Ms. Bradley started to talk about that with condo structures. But I think it's a bigger question, and I think this conversation is perfect, tying in to Dr. Pierce. In the old, what Boss does as a developer is we're a community-focused developer. So we develop the range of assets necessary for a vibrant community. A lot of developers focus on one asset type, such as residential. We do all the above. We do residential, commercial, schools, culture, event space, because our focus is on building a vibrant, sustainable community. Similarly, if you look back in the history of the church, the churches many times were the center of the community. The churches is where a lot of school started. The church is where you got married. The church is where you had your community meeting. And I think that the opportunity for our churches is to think about reinvigorating the use of the valuable real estate, not just on Sunday, but Monday, Tuesday, all the way from Saturday back to Sunday, and think about real estate uses that apply. So that is one of the angles that, makes Boss Development, I think, a unique developer, is we can work with the church to structure for some of the space to be co-leased, co-developed to a school, for special event space, for a nonprofit space, all in a way that is sustainable, that deals with the necessary liabilities and insurance protections, and critically thinks about your tax status, not violating your nonprofit status, and also not triggering excess real estate taxes. So I think what I would say is the good news is churches are sitting on valuable real estate, but we really have to think about how to activate and monetize that Monday through Sunday for the betterment of the community.
Wow, that's great.
Absolutely.
That's great.
I believe so. But, you know, you have to be careful about how you do it. Because, for example, St. Thomas the Apostle Roman Catholic Church was sold by the diocese, and it's now an event space. Someone I know went over to see the event space, and the cost to use the space for the day is $12,000. Now, this person used a space downtown that was only $6,000. So the question is, who is operating these facilities, for whom, and can we afford it? That's a question.
So thank you for adding that. But I want to stick to some key questions that our listeners have asked us to answer. So, Reverend Pierce, you have experience within the context of your house of worship, your church, and entering into development project. Could you tell us the background
Correct.
Of that, and you know, some of the takeaways that you wish you would have known ahead of time before you started the process?
Yes, about 5 years ago, I talked about reinventing and reimagining the church to the congregation, and what would the church look like if we built it today. And we began to think about all the mission work and the charity work and some of the things that we would be doing, and mainly what was preventing us from doing it was the building that we were in is about 150 years old. It needed great amount of repairs. So we recognized that we needed to do something different with the real estate. As Beatrice mentioned, to be able to utilize it throughout the week and have all kinds of programming. And so we needed to reconfigure that space to make it much more friendlier to utilize for other things. So we entered into an agreement with a developer. One of the pitfalls is make sure you find a developer who knows what they're doing, has done this before, has done it with a religious institution before. We had one that didn't have the understanding of what it took to go through the Attorney General process. And so therefore we had to abandon that process and reset and restart again. So we learned from number one, making sure that
it sounds like they were speculators. How do you know whether you're dealing with a speculator or a seasoned group?
You vet them.
Well, you vet them exactly. And we did eventually hire a broker to help us vet and go through and give us a broader list of developers and those who were seasoned in the marketplace, and, you know, look for references of what they had done and what they actually had completed. That was key. So making sure that your developer is big enough to handle the project that you have. They may have been able to do a few brownstones and things like that, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have the capacity or the bandwidth to do the project you're working on. So getting professionals, seasoned people, people who do this, even the law firm that we selected, is a law firm that specializes in this and has gone through the Attorney General process many times. So all of those nuances, which certainly a church doesn't usually have the in-house expertise, really needs to go out and make sure it has a team of people who are seasoned and have gone through this process several times.
So having gone through the process, could you, Reverend, explain the steps of internal approval from your congregation and that approval that the Attorney General is looking to rely upon? I know it may be different congregations, but our listeners they don't know anything about this, so I want to make sure they get the details.
So we are a congregational church, which is a little different in that everything must be approved and ratified by the congregation itself. Maybe in other congregations, the pastor may have a lot more authority or influence. In my case, the pastor has no vote, but certainly has a lot of influence in the case. So I have to sort of convince the congregation to move forward in one direction or another. And so we did have to put it to a vote and get the congregation to vote on it. And then we had the trustees vote, they voted for it, and then we had the congregation vote for it.
Great. And then that information goes on along to the Attorney General.
Well, you need to, you fill out a resolution on what you voted for, and then the attorney packages that with all that there needs to be to go to the Attorney General.
So, thank you. Valerie, what are the implications of the displacement of our religious centers of worship? And what are your recommendations?
We're losing our housing, and now we're losing our houses of worship. The implications are that it's a source of we're losing the centers where we get religious sustenance. You know, the church, especially the Black church, was the center where we organized, and the civil rights movement was organized through the churches, and the same thing here in on the East Coast. Let me just go through a litany of some of the places we've lost, but not all of them. But Faith Temple Church of God in Christ, where Malcolm X's funeral was held because no other church would do it out of fear that they might be bombed. But that church 2 years ago met the wrecking ball. Calvary United Methodist Church is closed and probably is slated for development. It merged with another Methodist church down the street from it. Legree Baptist Church on 125th Street is sold, and they're planning to do luxury condos. Baptist Temple has been wrecked and does not exist anymore. The vestry board of St. Martin's Episcopal Church was locked out of their church by the diocese, and because they did not want to use their loan money to do the belfry with the bells, they wanted to also use money to address maintenance issues in the church, as well as they have property. Reverend Johnson, who set this up, they had properties that didn't belong to the diocese, and the diocese mm-hmm. wanted to use those properties as collateral. St. Luke's, the sister church, followed a similar kind of issue. Metropolitan AME Church and All Saints Roman Catholic Church is closed, but it's protected, so they can't knock it down. So we don't know what's happening with that. St. Thomas the Apostle, which I mentioned earlier, Commandment Keepers Ethiopian Hebrew Synagogue, the church was sold out from under the congregation without their knowledge and for far too little money. And then the developer sold it to a private couple who are renovating it. Metropolitan Community United Methodist Church is a church we're working with as I speak, trying to help them retain their building. It's a beautiful church. It's on 126 and Madison Avenue. And there's examples that perhaps this was kind of rammed down people's throats and that they don't really want it. But
so where was the Attorney General at the time? The Attorney General has jurisdiction. Where was the Attorney General's office at the time? They always had jurisdiction over these processes.
Some do. They don't over diocese, the Catholic diocese and the Episcopal diocese. They do
not. The Supreme Court has jurisdiction.
Well, I don't know. But certainly the AG does not. And we're talking about congregations that might not be as savvy and sophisticated about doing this, which is why other people have to come in and help them now that they know that they could possibly get assistance from the Charities Bureau of the AG's office. Something might happen. They might, you know, they can examine this and look at it to see if what was done was according to their charter, which they have a charter on how they are to conduct their business, and that's something that has to be looked at. But, you know, there are 248 faith-based cities that are under the Landmarks Preservation Commission in the city, and 130 individuals, and 118 are in historic districts. In Harlem, we've lost over 20 churches at the cost of $50 million, and it probably would have been more because that sounds like really a very small amount of money for 20 faith-based institutions. This information we got from the Manhattan Borough President's Office as well as Landmarks Conservancy, which is a not-for-profit that has a sacred sites program that gives money to churches for their facade, to help them with their facade. But there's a matching grant element to that. So some churches can't seem to do that if it's a matching grant, but there could be creative ways to help them get matches to get that money because $100,000 helps, $150,000 helps. So from 2013 to 2018, 106 faith-based institutions were located in mid to high zoning districts, which means that they are probably, if they're not protected, at least going to be taller than they are currently are. Even if they save the facade, there'll probably be a setback. And, again, that's making the neighborhood not look like it should. And then when you talk about affordability, 20% affordability and then 80% market for a community whose median income is $37,000 for the year, it just doesn't work.
Valerie, if I could just finish on the point that Valerie is making, it's such a powerful point. You know, we've lost 20 churches, and I think it's important when we think about preservation that we really, this is Beatrice Sibley speaking, we really think about different points of preservation, right? There is one thing to preserve a historical building. There is another thing to protect ownership of the land by the religious institution.
Yes.
And there are situations in which it is possible to save the physical real estate, depending on the location, depending on the condition, depending on critically the zoning of the site and the zoning of the neighborhood. And there are situations where if you're failing that, you can preserve the land. So in my work with churches, my first project, 88 Morningside, we did a 99-year ground lease that really kind of set the bar for doing Harlem-based church deals on ground leases. And subsequently, I've executed ground leases with two other churches. And in my work with churches, I always say to them, point one of conversation, I don't want to buy your property, right? I want to be able to help you monetize your assets so that your asset remains a legacy for the your land remains a legacy for the church for future generations. So I think that's an important distinction for us to be focused on, not just preserving the building, but critically preserving the land.
So how is
right,
the
in some
land
churches,
lease
like I thought
different?
I heard Reverend Pierce say that you also, in addition to owning the church, have some parcels that you own too.
Correct.
Right.
That's correct.
So have you thought about developing those so that that can give you the income to maintain your church?
Well, it is maintaining our church now, and in the future plans, it will be incorporated in a building to also house 40 units of income, lower to moderate income housing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Beatrice, you made a good point. You said that the ground lease is somehow different from the outright sale. Could you kind of drill down on those two points? You know, what is the difference? If you give a ground lease for 99 years, is that really different from selling outright? And if
well,
so, how?
Give the summary of what a ground lease is. A ground lease is basically think about a sharecropper, right? The landlord owns the land and you work the land. So the ground lease, to make it worth for both sides, i.e. for it not to be an adversarial relationship, you have to give the developer economic control of whatever land is conveyed for an adequate period of time to create a financeable project. And a 99-year ground lease is deemed to be, generally deemed to be a financeable term. And just as a background, I don't know if your audience knows this, but the entire city of London is a ground lease. The land is not the land of all that under the city of London belongs to Her Majesty.
Right.
Hong Kong
right.
used to be a ground lease. So the structure of a ground lease is a structure that is very old in time and has very deep financing and legal track records. It's when we did 88 Morningside in 2008, 2010, it was an innovation in the market. Now land leases are becoming more common. All the New York City Housing Authority RFPs are being done on ground leases. A lot of private Trinity Church does a lot of land leases. So land leases are becoming a more common and financeable structure.
We are also looking into selling air rights for churches, where a program could possibly be developed that's similar to the program for Manhattan West, where St. Patrick's Cathedral and the big Episcopal Church and the synagogue are able to sell their air rights and have a broader area in which to use these air rights. Now, that was also done years ago to preserve the Broadway community for Broadway theaters. We want to talk with the powers that be in the city to see how we could make that happen for Harlem churches.
Right. Valerie, I feel like we're singing off the same hymnal, because the idea is, we have to think about, this is my structured finance voice speaking, how different ways to optimize the real estate. Selling the land is kind of the simplest way, right? You could rent the land or you could transfer the air rights. And what Valerie is talking about also are transfer districts where you can transfer development rights. In addition to the theater district, it was done in the High Line area, and it was done on the far west side, where you could basically create a district, a historic district or otherwise, where you can transfer air rights. But I think what it calls for is to be innovative about how we look at finding real estate solutions. One of the things I do in my work with churches, and a lot of churches don't recognize this, is when you have a property and you're looking at what that property is worth, you have to carefully look at the zoning.
Right.
One of the most common zonings in the Central Harlem core is an R72 zoning. And an R7, you know, Reverend Dr. Pierce, I wouldn't be surprised if your property is R72, given where it is. One of the benefits of the R72 zoning is what's called a community facility bonus. And that means that with the community facility bonus, you can develop twice as much on your site with a community facility than you can as residential. And so many times churches assume that if they want to develop their site, that they have to do condos. They might be able to do twice as much if they build a school, if they build student housing, if they build other forms of facilities that meet the definition of community facility. So you're basically increasing what you can sell the property for or monetize the property for under a ground lease or an air rights transfer, and build and mission the line by building the infrastructure to preserve and grow the community by adding schools, by adding other community benefits.
So, and this is a question for all three of you. You know, it's inevitable that real estate development is going to happen. If you go to the Museum for the City of New York, you can do a time series development analysis of, you know, when somebody landed on the tip of Manhattan all the way uptown. You can see it in real time. And so I say that to say that development will happen no matter what the nature of urban living. Churches are going to do development, and because of the change in religiosity, they're going to adapt to that reality. What happens once the church gets the windfall? Because, you know, as you know, selling property is really a one-off. You don't really get continuous revenue. You get a lump sum amount of money, and this is also true for people selling their single-family brownstones. What happens? What do you do with that money as a faith-based institution? What is the responsible thing to do, and how do you preserve that money so that it won't be gone in a year or so, and then your congregation is back to the same situation that it previously was? Poorly financed.
Hopefully they invest the money and live off of the earnings.
So I want to explore some concrete examples. Broadly, you want them to invest in money. But is there anything that they need to do specifically, the advisors that they need to have by their side, any vehicles that they need to invest in to make sure that they continue to have money for their mission as they explore these real estate options?
So one of the things I would mention, and I don't want to sound like a broken record here, one of the benefits of the ground lease structure is that it combines a real estate solution with a financial management solution that is commonly known as an annuity. You know, people buy insurance because an insurance contract sometimes can provide you annuity payment. Annuity meaning annual payment. The ground lease provides a contractual annual payment, sometimes quarterly, over 99 years. So when I structure ground lease with churches, we can rest assured that that income is inflation protected by growing annually and is available on an ongoing basis. So one way, the ground lease creates the combined solution of real estate and financial planning. The church could alternatively go out, you know, structured finance, and replicate that by selling the property and buying an annuity contract that pays a specific interest every year. The difference is when you do it by selling the property and investing in an annuity is that you've lost control of your real estate and you're no longer a part of the community, as has happened with Legree. In contrast with Church of the Master, they did a ground lease. They have their renovated church. They have their new building, and they have regular payments coming in every quarter for 99 years. And even though I, as a developer, have sold out of the project, if for any reason that check doesn't come, the power of the ground lease is that you can foreclose on the building. So the church, if that payment does not come in the mail, the church can, under commercial law, not real estate, not landlord-tenant court, under commercial law, foreclose on the building and take 74 apartments as its collateral. And so the guarantee on that payments are very strong. So punchline, you can structure the real estate to do both, or you can replicate an annuity in the financial market.
So that sounds pretty complex. Are there any advisors out there that could help churches handle these monies and not, you know, we want to make sure that these are consultants that have the expertise, not just somebody that happens to be sitting in the pew who dibbled and dabbled in day trading. What are the characteristics of a financial advisor that they need to consult?
Well, so, it needs to be a bona fide financial advisor who has some experience in working with churches. And I think that organizations like Landmarks Conservancy can help with referring those kinds of consultants who do that. Also, other churches who are working like that, like Judson Memorial in Manhattan, which has a working group that meets monthly to talk about issues like this and to help churches get through this.
The thing that I would add is I would advise churches to think about relationship banking, i.e., on Sunday after church, you might take your collection and deposit it in a bank, and you have a relationship with that bank. Most banks, especially the large banks, have financial planning arms, right? Chase, Bank of America, TD, M&T, Carver, all these banks have financial planning arms. So
yeah, but they're usually trying to sell their own products.
But the point that I would make is, yes, you do interview with a number of financial planners, and there are others that don't have banks, such as, you know, UBS and others that are established wealth managers that deal with faith-based institutions. But don't underestimate your existing relationships of trust with the financial institutions that represent you, but just ask them to look at your relationship as a church on a holistic basis to provide you financial planning options.
So, Reverend Pierce, as the minister in the room that is developing his property, what financial planning strategies have you employed? Have your members approved once you get the windfall or the proceeds from the sale or development of the project?
Right. So we've identified some investment professionals to place the money with, and then on top of that, we've created a finance committee outside of the bank with professionals to help guide our trustees. And then also a spending policy so that we only are spending the interest and not the principal to maintain that endowment in perpetuity.
Well, that's great.
You sound very unique.
Thankfully, my God prepared me with a financial background before I got to church, so it was
very
helpful.
Great.
So we have about five minutes left, and I'd like to get three recommendations from each of you on that you'd like our listeners to take away, and you know, emphasize how critical this topic is, because our churches need to be saved. So, Valerie, we'll start with you, please.
Don't sell your property until you know what you're doing. And maybe you don't need to sell it, but you need to have, you know, like a plan for what you're going to do. So, you know, like often developers come to churches with these pie-in-the-sky proposals about what they can do, and then the church ends up on the short end of it when the development project is completed. And that might not be the best way to go. Maybe HCCI could develop some kind of entity that would help churches make those decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Any house of worship in the Harlem community or in the city, as a matter of fact, welcome to come to HCCI and get technical assistance advice. We have professionals in our office that have been in development for over 20 to 30 years, and we also have ministers who have done this type of work that you could have access to. We welcome you all, anybody that would like to get information on how to protect their house of worship, their church, to come to HCCI. Beatrice, any final recommendations?
Sure. I would recommend to churches and that they not only do they have a plan for they develop their real estate assets, but they know what their real estate is worth. To know what your real estate is worth, people often think of it as an appraisal. An appraisal, you know, if you're financing your house, everyone knows that you get a financial appraisal. The kind of appraisal that churches should get is also has elements of what is called a financial feasibility analysis. So when asking for an appraisal, they shouldn't just ask appraisal for the building as is, but the building as it can be, as developed for commercial, as developed for community facility, as developed for residential, and all the options that can be done as of right. And in other cases, just very quickly, I know this is complicated, but if it's a landmark building, you can actually proactively change the zoning. And so there are things that apply. There is what is as of right for every building, but with landmark buildings also there are options that are uniquely available. So I would say the key part of this work is working with a team that can explore optimizing your value. And as Boss Development, if I could give my own advertisement, I think that is what is unique about our approach, is we can give you, in our evaluation of the site, whether you work with us as a broker or as a developer, a sense of what the way to optimize the value for the church and preserve the ownership.
Thank you. Reverend Pierce, any recommendations, final recommendations?
Yes, I will give you the three. Make sure your team of developers and I would say professional, seasoned folks, making sure that the broker, the lawyer, the accountant, your banker, everybody is working with you to make sure that this is a successful project and endeavor. Number two is not just because you get money does not mean that it will turn around. There is still work to be done in our church to make them economically viable. And so we have to start to reimagine how we do church today to make it the economic place that can sustain itself and can carry and help the community. And lastly is just knowing your financials, knowing your numbers is always important, especially for pastors, because we do a lot of things that are intangible, but we do know what the tangibility of what the cost is, and we have to know what they are on a monthly basis so that we are taking care of our homes and our houses properly and with the stewardship that we should.
Thank you. Thank you all. Before we close out, I'd like you to opportunity to give you a chance to tell our listeners where they can contact you at. So we'll start with Ms. Bradley. How could they reach you?
We have a website called SaveHarlemNow.org, and we have a Facebook page, which is Save Harlem Now, exclamation point, I believe. Yeah. Anyway, so we have a Facebook presence, and we also have a website, and you can sign up to be on our mailing list at the website.
Thank you. Reverend Pierce.
Yes, we also have a website, Grace Congregational Church of Harlem. We also have a Facebook page, and we are located at 310 West 139th, so you can certainly find me there as well.
And you're still having services, right? You're not shut down for development.
Yes, we are still having services at 11 a.m. on Sunday, at least for the next 8 months.
Great. Beatrice from Boss Development, how do our listeners reach you?
I am the easiest person to reach. I have had the same number for 20 years, so here it is, 917-841-2275. It's Beatrice Siblis, 917-841-2275. I can also be reached very easily by email, beatrice@bosdevelopment.com. That is Beatrice, B-E-A-T-R-I-C-E, at Box Development, BOSDEVELOPMENT.com. And look forward to communicating with you.
Well, this has been a very insightful show. HCCI's Lights of Hope Radio. You're listening to Saving Harlem Churches. Thank you very much for joining us. This is Malcolm Punter. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of Harlem Congregations for Community Improvement. You can reach Harlem Congregations for Community Improvement, otherwise known as HCCI, at 212-281-4887 or via the World Wide Web at www.hcci.org. That's www.hcci.org. And it's been our honor to bring you a Saving Harlem Churches segment of HCCI's Lights of Hope. Thank you again, and join us for our next segment very soon. Thank you.
Thank you,
guests. Valerie Bradley, Reverend Nigel Pierce, and Beatrice Simmons. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Yes.
God bless.